This is the Talking Split Podcast.
Welcome, coaches, to the Talking Split Podcast once again. I am Rob Calder, joining you as always with the ever punctual Nathan Cooper Brown. Welcome, Coops.
Good to see you, Robbie.
And the terminally late Darren Best. Welcome, Bestie.
You know, just want to give a shout out to the Victorian government upgrading our roads, what seems to be my whole life. I come here a different way every time. You know, I'm discovering new roads due to the never-ending red line that just pops up on my Google Maps.
I thought your pause then on answering the question was just building into you being late, and I thought that was excellent.
Yeah.
It was actually very well done, yeah. As it turns out. But, hey, we all deal with that as coaches, isn't it? Like, you jump in the car, you throw maps on. Even if you know how to get there, you still throw maps on. It's like, what am I dealing with today?
Yeah.
As it turns out. The ETA of 905 for Bestie is very much on the money. And to be fair, when you send through the ETA 905, you are at 905 nine times out of 10.
Yeah, look, I at least say, you know, yeah, hey, I'm running sure. a little bit late. Hey, before we get started, I've got a little story to share, right? That was very punctual of you, Rob.
Thank you very much, Bestie. On time, on target.
Yeah. You know, good passes make great shots. Let's just keep it rolling. So I was out and about at a basketball stadium over the weekend, shock, and somebody came up to me who I don't know and said, are you Darren Best, right? And typically that then follows with, why didn't you pick my kid? You know, like, what is, you know, your program's like, oh, yeah, anyway. And I was kind of just hesitantly said, yeah. And he said, you know what? I'm a huge fan of the Talking Split podcast. So I just wanted to give you, Rob, a little bit of a pump up for that. Like, I think that's happened a couple of times now. Like, yeah. People have come up to say, like, how much they love it. And you guys as listeners, you know, Rob does a great job putting it all together. I know he gives us a big intro, but I think it's important. Like, he's the one that is the brains behind it. He drives it. He sets the schedules, the questions, everything like that. So just wanted to give you a bit of a pump up there because clearly people are listening and, please keep doing it.
No, I appreciate it. It's the good episodes are the ones I plan. The bad episodes are the ones I put zero thought or effort into, and we just sort of see where it takes us. But you're on the money, though, because we average around about 130-odd downloads per day the podcast. So that's in itself big. Over 145,000 downloads of all time. So that's, again, big. That's more than I can get through, especially on my terrible NBN that I have at my place that's a bit questionable at the start. But it is one of those areas that there would be absolutely no need to put this together if people didn't listen to it. And it is great that we get so many people hit us up on various things. Usually, similar story time. Usually when someone needs something from me in the coaching accreditation space, they start the email with, hey, Rob, really like the podcast. Can you help me with this, and this? And I'm not too sure if they do listen or not, but it's a fairly easy segue into what we do in that space. But obviously, thanks to you too, Jenna, Zoe, even going back to the Ash Arnott, Mike Zeppel, Justin Schuller days as well. There's plenty of people that still listen to the back catalogue
from
like the bad days where we literally huddled around a laptop and just spoke into it and hoped for the best. We've thankfully upgraded a little bit now. But of course, if you are a listener, hopefully you do follow along using iTunes and Spotify to listen to the podcast. If you can leave a rating and review, that is always very helpful for us as that. And you can follow along on the Talking Split handle, at Talking Split on X and Instagram. Just gone blank on that and almost called it Twitter again. You guys leave this week. End. Coops, what's the lead up looking like for you?
Yeah, have not done anything.
Excellent work.
Yep.
Prior planning prevents something performance.
Yep, that's about it. No, I was like, we're obviously in block one and there's plenty going on. Yeah, I was in Ballarat last night. I'm off to Traralgon tonight. So just making sure everything's, running smoothly on the ground at this point, and late Sunday night I'll start packing and trying to get my head around being in the States for 3 weeks.
Bestie, what kind of a planner are you for trips? Are you a you strike me as a packing cubes person where everything is diligently laid out, itemized, everything?
Well, the first thing is, and Coops would know this because we travel a bit together, like, I bring my pillow everywhere, right? My pillow is affectionately known as the coma.
No shocky, because he also brings his own chair to the podcast.
That's true. My pillow is affectionately known as the coma. You put your head on it, you're just in it straight away, so it's good. No, not too bad. Like, my mate, just those, I've got those couple of main things I've got to make sure I have, and then other than that, I'm good. But for me, similar, you know, we had NPP last night, FDP was this morning, then tomorrow night we've got our last NPP All-State compete where Coops and I are at, and then SDP, which I've perfectly planned to be the KC hub right next to my house for this one. You know, I've done the long trips already. I was out to Monty last week. And then, yeah, we actually have an under-20 Navy camp on Saturday.
Yeah.
And then it's a quick trip up to Bendigo for me Saturday afternoon to see my family. I think we're going to drop in and watch the WNBL game because we're friends with some people from Sydney, and then back on Sunday to pack and...
out of here.
We're out of here. Yep. Yeah.
About 3 weeks from memory?
Yeah, just under. Yep. Yeah, just under. So personally, I'm excited that we were able to add some things to the schedule around some of my ex-teammates and college coaches from when I was over there. They're now located in Texas, so we've picked up some extra opportunities and games and stuff with the kids through that. So it'll be a bit exciting for me to see them. I haven't seen them since 2010.
Yep, excellent. Should be a heck of a trip. Look forward to catching up with both of you once you get back. And Zoe, I'm sure you'll have plenty of stories to tell. As is always the case, there's always something that goes wrong at some stage and a flight gets bumped somewhere. Touch wood, that doesn't happen to you in an important part. But they're always eventful trips. You had your first training session with the group on Sunday, I think it was.
Sunday, yep, yep, that's right.
How did that go?
Yeah, good. Like, kids are really into it. Only issue for us really is we don't have a natural point guard. But we do have three really big posts. So it could be some two out, three in.
Old school.
Yeah, thing. Just like live with the ball.
Late
down
70s, low. Early 80s, and just pound the thing inside.
That's why I said to Coops, you're going to have to be comfortable slowing down a little bit.
That pace.
Look, my eye did start twitching a little bit as soon as Bestie said that, but yeah, we'll see what happens when we get over there.
Makes a lot of sense. All right, so we're talking playbooks today. This is the crutch of most coaches out there. I'm sure that we all have, like, you guys are roughly the same age as me. You would have remembered like trawling through the internet for hours on end to see that one golden playbook from a college coach somewhere that has found its way to get leaked online. You know, it's 182 pages worth that every player needed to remember every counter and every read and every wrinkle and all those types of things. Well, such a different space it's in now, I suppose, more than anything else. Like, how much weight did you put into a playbook when you were a young coach, Cooks, compared to now?
Well, just going back to my playing days, I never saw a playbook until I got to college. You know, everything was just by word of mouth or, you know, being demonstrated on the floor. And then, you know, even when I got to the Titans, because I was, you know, I was training fodder, you know, I didn't get a copy of it. I just had to...
Just in case you leaked it.
That's right, exactly, yeah. No trust. You know, and then when, you know, I was on that third team some days and we were the scout team and, you know, we were getting, you know, the shuffle, or we were getting, you know, the flex from Perth, you know, shuffle from Tigers or flex from Perth or whoever it was, you know, and we're just learning that thing on the fly and then going playing against the first and the second team. So that's how it was. And then I got to college and I got handed this like 100-page, you know, bounded book. And it was like, here's a playbook. You better know it. And that kind of tied into me and my kind of pursuit of coaching, and I was able to kind of go through that and commit it to memory and understood how it worked and how I could implement it and follow it along and help players understand, help my teammates understand it. And so then I've put a lot of weight into it. So every team that I've had, except my first teams before I went to college, I'll create some sort of document, some sort of playbook. Not with the expectation that they're going to know it, you know, like the back of their hand. I just love the idea of them having a resource, that there's something that they can always check back to. So, yeah, it's a big part of my coaching now. Yep. Yeah, and college probably did that.
Yep. Were you similar sort of coming in, Beth? Like, I know you obviously played at Melbourne Tigers for a little bit too, and we all know the size of the Melbourne Tigers playbook when you start looking at shuffle and counters and reads and all that sort of. Did you ever get a playbook as a player or anything like that, or did you just have to sort of pick it up as you went?
Nah, yeah, just picked it up and was lucky to have, you know, coaches that were really good at it to be part of it. And then similar to Coops, it wasn't until we got to college that we were given this massive Bible of stuff. And to be honest, we didn't even use half of it. You know, if I'm being totally honest, but to learn it, and then, yeah. I'm very similar with Coops. I think it's a good resource to have. Not everyone learns that way. We've started making sure, you know, particularly with our groups where we have smaller prep times, is when we're like last year with the Navy team on zero, we filmed some of the stuff at practice quickly and just popped it in the WhatsApp because, you know, everyone learns a little bit differently. And I think, you know, to your point earlier around we're trying to find playbooks, but now, like, if you're part of the Fast Draw community, you just constantly, like, it's just constant. There's people that work for Fast Draw that are, you know, their whole job is to dissect and recreate other teams' playbooks for you. So it's like that is in itself is great.
Is it probably more now an issue of trying to filter out what you don't need?
Definitely.
Like, because everything's so accessible to us now. Like, it's not hard to jump on Twitter, X. Sue me, Elon. Go for it. Like, it's one of those things where it's like you can just get everyone's offense wherever you want. And like, did you used to be a bit secretive about your playbook, Bestie? Whereas now you're probably a little bit more open about it.
Well, no, I wouldn't say I was secretive. I just was probably more, I would only share it with other people within our club.
Yep.
You know, like I definitely wouldn't want to give it to the opposition,
yep.
But I wouldn't say, you know, like I was secretive about it. But at BV, like we've said over and over, like, It's open. Like, yep. if you want some resources, let us know. If you want to come to sessions, let us know. Because what we're doing is really no secret. You watch the NBL, you watch the Boomers, you know, that's what we're doing. Now, when we get into tournament prep for nationals and that, those particular state coaches will have their additions or wrinkles. You know, they might be a little bit secretive and most of them wouldn't show them at an East Coast or even, you know, we're in a situation in Victoria where we probably don't need to show them, you know, until the crossovers anyway, which is lucky. So that, as a coach, is what you find fun is when you see those little things,
yep,
popping up, you know, after Wednesday at a national. It's like, oh, that's a bit different. That's good.
Makes sense. How do you, to get, like, Coops, you watch a lot of basketball, like everyone here, I suppose. How do you filter out, I really like that action, I want to add it to my playbook. I really like that action, I want to add that to my playbook. I really like that. How do you filter out what you can and can't get into it before you just make it so complex and complicated that it's just not feasible anymore?
Yeah, it's the opposition. So for me, it's who are they playing this against and how does that relate to the opposition I'm going to play against? So what is the level of athleticism? So if there's a 7-foot shot blocker on the floor that they are using a certain wrinkle or offense, or again, defense, obviously playbooks both sides of the ball, but just talk about offense for the moment. Yeah, if there's a genuine 7-foot rim protector and they're using a particular action to negate that, well, do I really need that on a Friday night when I'm playing against the 5'11", you know, center from Pakenham? So I immediately look at the athleticism and the scope of who are the athletes that is being used against. Then look at the IQ of that group as well. So, you know, if I'm watching like the under 16 America's qualifiers, now these are athletes, or this is a level of athlete with IQ that would be roughly what I'm going to play against, or what we are going to play against, you know, in Turkey. So, okay, well, let's have a look at how they're adjusting to it. And then I'm also thinking about the overall IQ of the opposition coach, myself, you know, how am I going to teach it? You know, do I have scope to actually be able to put this thing in, or am I just enjoying it for, you know, the basketball?
Just looks pretty.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just the enjoyment of, you know, a coach or a coaching staff being able to create something that's a little bit different and effective. So, and I would highly recommend that to coaches is don't just look at the aesthetics of the action, but have a little bit of a deeper thought about it.
Yep. And it's hard to, like, I love flare screens, but I love coaching under 12s. Fair to say flare screens in under 12 basketball, one, non-existent, and two, not effective. So it's a difficult one to sort of to marry out too with, is what I'm doing relevant for now? Is what I'm doing going to help the kids in the long term? Because you make the argument that, okay, in under 12s, they don't need flare screens, but by the time they hit 16s, they probably will. So when do you teach it? When do you put it in? Those types of things too. It's a really hard one to work out. For my bestie, you spoke a little bit about Fast Draw before. I'm assuming that's what you're using to diagram all your playbooks and those types of things?
Yeah, we use Fast Draw here. It's, you know, I think it's probably the most common. I think it's very easy to use also, but I think it's the most common, which makes it easier to share because there's a, you know, the fast trade function in there is is key. I'll just leverage off what Coops was talking about a little bit before. We've spoken about systems of play, which I'm a believer in. You know, I know ours is, you know, still very concept-based. However, I think one of the most important things is to consider your starting spots on the floor. You know, when you say, oh, I want that action looks good, like, well, it's out of a diamond, and you're running a, I don't know, five out. You know what I mean? So how are you going to get into that? How do you then get out of that if you don't score to get back into your stuff? You know, like, they're the things that you need to consider on top of what Coops has said, because I'm a big believer of, if you've got all these different starting points, you're then starting to get into this set-based playbook, which can work. Like, obviously it can work, but what it requires one, way more practice, right? And then two, the level of communication on the court as it's happening needs to be all-time high. Otherwise, you know, you get this whole, like, this player's in the wrong spot, this player's in the wrong spot, then you're caught at the end of the shot clock, like that type of stuff. So I probably lead a little bit more to seeing something on TV or whatever and adding it to an ATO package, because that's a little bit easier to do. You know, all right, it's going to be a completely different starting points, the ball's coming out of bounds anyway, like that type of stuff. That's, yep. Yeah. Probably how I go with it.
Yeah, it's such a good point, and I've got this feedback from athletes in the past. Like, as soon as you change that starting alignment that Bessie's talking about, that takes so much more bandwidth from the athlete. Yeah. It does. You know, it's like, oh my god, this is brand new. And all you might do is just, again, like, you just start in the diamond, but you use two or three concepts that you know your team's really familiar with. But because it's a different alignment,
yeah,
you know, oh my god, you know, you get that freak out moment. So it's such a great point. You just got to be really, really aware of what your athletes are going to be able to take on board. Yep. And what you can pull out of the playbook to actually implement.
Yeah. Do you start with the end in mind when you're putting, I know we've gone off on a little bit of a tangent here away from playbooks but into offense as such, but do you start with the end in mind, like the action you want to get a scoring action, and then try and build everything back to that point? Can you get some misdirection, some shifting the D to certain areas?
I think more about what we're going to do the most. So I know that I like to play fast. I don't think that's any any secret now, but knowing that, you know, majority of your possessions are going to be, you know, in transition, they're going to be broken plays, that in my mind is, okay, well, that's where we're going to live the most. That's the first part of my playbook. That's the first part of implementation. The thing that we're going to do the most, that's what we need to be best at. That's what we should have the best grasp on, and then kind of work back from there. So
Do you have structured transition in that space, or do you make it more read-based for players?
Yeah, so we have a primary break, a secondary break, and then we would have walk-up sets kind of in that order. So we want to use the primary break the most. So that's the one where we're playing fast and free and creative. We don't use a numbered break. We keep it a lot more unpredictable and really try to utilize the pace in that first 4, 6, 8 seconds. Then it's the read on the defense. So, you know, do we have the advantage to stay in some sort of dominoes or split kick extra, so we can just spread the floor out with 5-on-4 or 4v4, 3v3, whatever it may be, that we can just go play basketball. And part of the playbook, part of the system is what we look like in that, in terms of our end of penetration execution, our second cutter reads, our receiver reads. And then there's the secondary break, which is, okay, all the defense is back. We've got to play some sort of 5-on-5, but we're still kind of moving with some pace. And there's a great quote from Gorge around, you know, the post determines your shape and then the defense determines your action. And so that's where we want our athletes to be able to read it. So, okay, defense is back. Our post is ahead of the ball. We call that early. There's an early rim run. Now we're going to use our concepts to create, keep, and exploit an advantage. Then, you know, that's the majority of the game. And then out of, dead ball scenarios, ATOs, like what Bessie is talking about, now we're into, okay, well, let's think about what alignment we're going to use, what the defense is probably going to do, and you know, who do we want to end up with the shot and what shot do we want to get.
Yep, makes sense. So looking at that transition phase in particular, Bestie, how structured, I suppose, do you want them to be? And how would you teach that at your practice if you, say, don't have a full court to teach transition basketball in?
Yeah, good one. Structured is probably not the word that we would use to describe it. We just have guidelines, yep. I think, is the way we sort of teach it. So the first thing is we actually spend time on getting wide before we get deep. You know, I think that's important. We talk about closest player inbounds it, you know, to start that. If you are the person that secures the defensive rebound, so it hasn't got in, we want you to start it. You know, so whether it's a couple of dribbles, bust out, even if you are a big. Now, understanding we're in a development space, so we encourage a little bit of that. We say, and, you know, Coops is going to have to get used to it because we're probably going to play one of them as a point guard in America. You know, so we have that, but we also talk about our ball handlers sweeping in or wheeling in, wheeling out, like catching on the move, not running back to the balls, those types of things. We spend a lot of time on that. The kick ahead pass, we spend a lot of time on that. The kick opposite pass, we're spending more time on that. And the relationship between each player, like one of my favorite sayings is like, you're either observing or you're participating. You know, there's no in the middle. So, like, even if you don't have the ball, you're still participating. You need to be an active receiver. That's why we've also somewhat gone away from saying split kick extra. We're more just saying receivers now, because you know, you're an active receiver. That can happen. That split kick extra stuff can happen, but it's not a play as such. But yeah, in transition, it's more just guidelines. You know, get wide before you get deep. Catch it on the move. Try and kick ahead. If you can't kick ahead, look to kick opposite. You know, if you can't kick ahead or you can't kick opposite, then clearly it's one-on-one, like you should have space, right? Because that means people are denying in the passing lanes. Don't run on top of a teammate. You know what I mean? That type of stuff.
How many times do you think you have to say that per game?
Per game?
I feel like it's regular on my end. Like they just tend to gravitate towards someone else for some reason.
Probably not that much, yep. But having said that, we haven't had games for a while. You know, like we haven't had a lot of games for a while.
Last again after America.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was pretty good in the Giddy Daniels Cup though. Like, but we'd been spending weeks, building it up.
Yep.
You know, so
yeah,
that, and then it's just, you know, what happens when the ball pierces the three around being a receiver. So we spent a lot of time on that, and I think it's important.
Yeah.
So guidelines, I wouldn't necessarily say.
No, that's good.
Yeah.
Like I like that there is some framework, I suppose, for lack of a better term, but you're not bound to it. Like it doesn't have to be this, because this won't always be the situation that's facing you. And this is, like I talk a lot at coaching courses in particular about the need to do disadvantage work, like the 2-on-1, the 3-on-2, 4-on-3 stuff, just so they have to make decisions in really short periods of time. The offense should be successful because they have that numerical advantage, but because they have that, they also have to make more decisions. Whereas the defense has to hustle a little bit because they are outnumbered. I kind of feel like you get the best of both worlds with that sort of stuff. Like, I love like the small side of game stuff, and you know, I just find it fun.
Well, just for a bit of context.
Oh, sorry. Half court, really difficult, sorry.
Yeah.
You need to do some sort of starting from halfway in a disadvantage or something like that. That's probably, I forgot that part of the question.
Yeah,
that's probably the only way you can do it, really.
Yep, yeah. And I agree with you, because like, there's things you can do where you can have your offense and your defense lined up along the foul line. Offense have to hit half court and come back. Defense have to hit the baseline and come back. Or you can have them like a step inside half court each.
Yeah.
Work it out. Like, there's ways you can manipulate the geography.
The two-way teaching stuff helps with that. So like after a score, you're starting to work on your D-trans, and then the offense is starting to like work on their inbound catch sweep. Like if they can throw a kick ahead before halfway, then that's a point.
Yep.
Or something like that. Definitely. That's how you could work it in. Sorry, yeah, Coops.
No. It's a great point about just, you know, play it back the other way. Like even if you're in half court, just always play it back the other way. It's just a great chance for the O to work on the first 4 seconds and the defense to work on the D-trans. No, I just wanted to give a little bit of context around like those guidelines and how our primary brake works is that you know, we don't have the luxury of a trail post. So the higher you go, you see more teams that want to have that, you'd say, kind of traditional trail, you know, trail post, maybe 6'10", really mobile, great screen setter, you know, can shoot the three, but good in the pick and roll. You know, we don't have that at our level. You know, we have a point guard, we have three wings and a post. And so we can afford to be a little bit more, give them a little bit more leeway and play in a bit of a different way. And that's been great for us to be able to do that. But I know that, you know, coaches would be watching the NBL or WNBL or Europe or the NBA, and it's not going to look as much like that. And that's a big reason why, because a lot of teams like to put that that particular player in the trail so they can initiate, you know, certain actions.
Yep, and it is one of those things that your players need to experience. They need to experience what it's like in the full court, in the half court, playing in transition with limited time to work it out as well, because I'll circle back to playbooks in particular. You can put it on a piece of paper, but it doesn't really mean much to them other than it's on the piece of paper. And we know some players don't learn super well that way. Like the video idea, Bestie, I think is on the money. Like I think that's a great way to do it. VREPS is another program, so VREPS, which is just a little animation program effectively where you can put players on the court and you can maneuver them around and manipulate them. So they actually get a bit of a visual. If you can't film it, there is a way to do it in that space. And free program, I think, from memory. It does take a little bit of getting used to, but it's something I've used in the past where I may not have had something on film that I wanted players to see, but they can then go and just watch the little animation, which is just like a little cartoon type thing. So there are ways to get that done without being on court necessarily. On court will always win out. I think we all understand that, but there are ways to get that information earlier in that space.
Yeah, for all our computer friends out there, if you could get some VR going on playbooks, that would really help us out. So
headsets headsets.
So throw the phone on the VR goggles and put our athletes in their play action on the floor.
There was a downloadable chip that we could just install into their
straight into the brain.
Straight into the brain.
Yeah, let's bypass the VR.
We just upload the SD card. Like, congratulations, you're in this team. Yeah. Anyway,
I think it's called 2K, and what you guys are trying to get into is esports.
Yeah.
That's what this is. And look, it's probably not too far away until we have esports for national junior championships as well. And
well, it's coming to the Olympics, right? They're having a whole Olympics about it, right? Apparently, yeah. Apparently, yeah. They're going to have an esports Olympics.
Jeez, yeah. What a world we live in.
Yeah. Stuff.
Yeah. Just circling back, I haven't done a great job answering this question, but it's building. If you only have a half court, why don't you venture across the midway line and have a chat to the other coach, right? I know, right? And if they're not at the level, maybe they're a different age group, gender, whatever, enlighten them at the possibility of playing some three-way. So you can go start in your half, go down back, and then the next group runs on, and then they'll go at their basket, half down back. We do a lot of that at our camps because we've got so many kids, whatever. So that's probably the best way.
No, it's a great point.
Is go across and have that conversation. You know, obviously not at that practice, but say, hey, next week, for example, can we budget 20 minutes where we're going to work doing this? So because I'm sure they'd benefit from it too.
Absolutely. I think we've all been in that situation before where we've got like a 6 p.m. training. You've got your team there and you're sort of looking down the other end. And it's like, hey, I can't see their coach and none of their players here. I might have the full court tonight. Like, and all of a sudden what you had on your session plans out the window, it's like, we're in the full court. This is like gold for every coach out there. But it is something that you can easily do. And to be fair, most clubs and associations are pretty good at scheduling trainings with similar age groups.
Yeah.
Like they do a fairly good job with the constraints they have in place. So, but yeah, have the chat because you can't tell me that the other team wouldn't want to get up and down as well. It's a good way to coach other kids, hear a different voice for them as well. I think there's nothing but positives in that space. All right, we've spoken a little bit about transition, like primary break, secondary break, and then sort of your walk-ups. What chapters, Coops, are you putting in your playbook? So are you going like transition stuff, half court sets, press breaks, ATOs, baseline? So like what's the makeup look like, I suppose?
Yeah, so the document starts with the style of play. So we get some text, some description around what are some non-negotiables, what are some success criteria. So we try and get more of a broad philosophy down. So something that, again, you know, some athletes do like to read. Some of them want to see the language that's being spoken to them. So we'll, for me in particular, but we obviously use this for our BV system and style. So we start with those kind of introductory pages to lay out the style and the philosophy. And then I would start with the offense and do exactly what we were talking about and start it with the kind of the bigger, more used possessions. So start with full court diagrams on the primary break, then go into the press breaker, then go into our conceptual motion. If there was the need to see some full court, like maybe if we had an early punch screen or a rub screen, we would add that, but then we would go into the half court. Then we'd move into our walk-up set series. So it'd probably just be one series, so same alignment with some different counters or different actions to get certain people the basketball. And then would shift to zone. So zone offense, maybe a zone quick hitter. Then we'd finish with the out-of-bounds package. Then flip over to defensive side of the ball. So then start with defensive transition rules. Then full court defensive disruption. Start with more man principles that we would use. So we, you know, we like to disrupt the point guard as part of our defaults. We call it face 40. So we'd have something like that. Then if we had some full court potential zone press or zone based disruption. Then go into half-court man-to-man foundations, then go into screen coverages, then go into zone defenses, if we were using any, and then would maybe finish with potentially some defensive, quick hitters or counters that we'd use. So maybe like a late quarter hit or something like that that we felt like needed a diagram as well. So it kind of systematically moves through the things that we do the most, that we do the least. And we try and add some descriptions to each frame as well so that the athletes and the coaches are getting as much information as possible.
It's a lot.
Yeah, that's volume one.
Yeah. 15-part thriller from Coops coming through. It is. Like when you really sort of map it out like that, that is a lot of chapters straight off the bat that you could potentially go through. And look, we're talking different levels here, of course. Like, I mean, you're talking your Oz level kids and into senior basketball, so it's a different world. They can take on more in that space because they're not learning something necessarily from the ground up in that space. Bestie, are there any other areas that you would add into a playbook in that, or is that part two?
No, I think like that's pretty much covers everything. That's the basic structure of most playbooks. It's just some things might morph into one.
Yep.
You know, I think, yeah.
So with a playbook that size, would you go paper or would you try and go video, especially for junior athletes?
Well, I think for us, we always draw it up on Fast Draw anyway. And I think you can send it as a PDF, so it might not necessarily have to be paper. The main reason we like to draw it up on Fast Draw is for coaches, probably more so than the players. We send it to the players for sure, but when we're putting those sections into our session plans, like often, like on the second page, we might copy and paste an action or something so we can make sure that we're doing it correctly. But yeah, I think a full video playbook of that would be a lot. I would more go through the path of, as we're building it up, you should probably film your practice anyway, and then what you see as areas of improvement for your group, just pick those snippets out from the film and dump them in. Like if kids have got like part A down, for example, you probably don't need to put it in there because, you know, you don't want to flood them.
No, that makes a lot of sense. It's, once again, when I was younger and dumber in my coaching, yeah, we got a couple in here today, Bestie. So we're about to hit on a topic that is very close to your heart in particular, because we've already spoken about this person this morning. We used to train at Box Hill Senior Secondary College, which had that elevated platform above. So we had our state team training in there, and we went through, like we dedicated an entire session to, we're going to film everything. We're going to go through everything, all the counters, all the wrinkles, and we're going to give this to everyone. We're all in charge of it, just so we're all on the same page. We planned this thing out for weeks, making sure that we had every possible, okay, we're going to run our 40 series, but we're going to get it for the two men on the third side of the floor. Yep, no worries. We film that. There was a development coach at the time that was put in charge of that. It's like, hey, stand up there with the camera, make sure you got this thing down. Yep, no worries, Rob, got it. I go back to watch the film and he's put the camera, but he's gone and stood in front of the camera and his fat head is standing there in the middle of the screen the entire time. So we wasted a whole session getting through our offense. That coach, Nick Mihai.
Well, there we go. You know, just this morning his car is parked going over two parking spots, so he's got an issue understanding like where things should be.
But that was on his way into coaching with the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix in the NBL, so there you go, guys.
Yeah, pathways.
It's,
but it is one of those things, though, and I must admit, when I finally got around to refilming everything and getting everything without the bonce of Mihai in the middle of the screen, that went for a good 7 to 8 minutes. And I sort of think about that and it's like, can I engage 16-year-old kids, 15-year-old kids for 7 to 8 minutes? That's a lot for them to take in as well.
Mm.
So you do have the danger of being so prepared and wanting to give all the information can actually freak them out a little bit too. Because I asked the kids, like, how many of them watched it? Two put their hands up straight away, and it's like, well, at least one of you is lying. Three or four neglected to make eye contact. And it's like, well, I know you definitely haven't. And then the other one's just like, nah, I just didn't do it. So it's like, well, I've tried. Now what?
Well, it's the old, like, put something a little, like, quirky halfway through the video or three quarters of the way through the video to see if anyone actually, like, mentions it.
Yep.
But, you know, I'm pretty sure it was Ash. Ash gave me an example once of a scout exam from a Polish national team. Did you guys see that?
I have.
Yep. Yeah. Where it would actually be quiz-based around the opposition. So, you know, multiple choice, who's their, you know, best three-point shooter, what coverage would we be in, blah, 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 draw there, this, whatever. So you can go down that path a little bit too with, you know, some of your off-court stuff, you know, get them in groups and get them to draw it out or whatever. And then that also helps with an understanding of, you know, what means what in a diagram as well. So maybe you can spend a little bit of time on that, which will help within your, you know, when you're drawing stuff on a whiteboard. So that's one way to, like, get him in groups and get him to, like, you know, draw, you know, whatever it might be, this or set A or, you know, concept A or whatever it might be.
Yep.
That can help.
We've done some things too at SDP to try and execute that exact thing. So try and get a little bit more peer-to-peer connection and conversation and information retainment. So we would demonstrate something, maybe play it out a little bit, then we would shoot or break it up so we're trying interleaving, and then when we come back we would actually have an athlete then lead that segment again. Okay, so what did you hear? What were we working on? You know, can you successfully communicate it and get your fellow athletes to do it? So I think being a little bit creative in how you're taking the playbook from either video or paper to floor, especially if you're in VJBL, you know, is you know, just something you absolutely should be trying more often than not.
Yep, absolutely. And I'm curious in both your answers because you're both in obviously the same roles at the moment but have been in charge of programs at association level in that space as well. Association playbooks. I'll go one word and then we'll unpack it. Pro or con?
Pro.
Bestie?
Pro.
Yeah. Oh, geez, look at the stain almost on Bestie's face then. Like, how dare you even ask me this question? Why are you pro on this?
Because I'm a dictator. No, no.
No tater joke, Rob. No, that's usually your go-to.
We've gone already a couple of times this year.
Well, we've spoken about the benefits of this before on other podcasts. I think it's just the biggest one is it reduces the amount of teaching, which ultimately helps the grading. You know, so if you have club-wide press breakers, if you have this stuff, it helps with your grading because you're not relearning all the time, which, you know, then they grade better, then they play a better league, and, you know, the flow and effect of all that helps. The other thing, the best thing that was a unintended, really positive, is the coaches from other age groups start helping each other and talking, and, you know, that for me is the biggest thing. Like, oh, yeah, we do this, we do that. Like, this is how I, you know, helped implement it with our group. And then the kids with the kids watch the game before or they watch the game after, they see similar stuff. It just the benefits are just,
yep.
Not to mention, you know, just the reality is most of your lower team coaches, pardon me, are a little bit inexperienced with that stuff. So that's a resource for them. Your real only challenge you have with that stuff is getting your ones coaches on board. That's the only challenge around it. And like I've said before, you know, getting the right people that you want in your program is super important. But the way you build that is, you know, you can have some of them involved in that process prior to each season starting. You know, if you really value them and, you know, that's one way to create buy-in. Like, okay, this is the direction we're going. You have a voice in it too. Like, convince us.
How far down did you go with that? Was it like every bit of structure was association based, or did you give them a little bit of autonomy to say, hey, because you've got this type of a setup, you don't necessarily have to run that. You can find something else you want. Like if you don't like this baseline, you can find your own baseline.
Oh, yeah, we didn't do end and side outs. Like, okay. they can do that. That was theirs. That's fine. But, yeah, everything else.
Yep. What about you, Coops?
Yeah, I just – the value of especially having the playbook aligning with where athletes want to go. So firstly would be up the pathway at the association, and then secondly would be connected to us, so to, you know, to the state pathway and then to the national pathway. Because it, you know, as we've seen, like Doug Lamov, Michael Ashford, you know, talking about the consistency in language, the consistency in, you know, in system is a huge proponent in decision making. You know what I mean? If we want to be able to increase the ability of the athletes to make better decisions, we need to create more consistent systems and terminology for them. So yeah, just building on all the things that Bestie said, which are vital and make them such a positive thing, that alignment with where the athlete wants to go and narrowing the voice is only going to benefit the athletes in the long run.
Yeah, I don't think there's any real drawbacks, in particular if you allow coach input into it. Like, yeah. If you're just walking in and saying, this is what you're all running, bad luck, you're going to have some problems.
Yeah, and look, I joke about the dictator thing, right? But
yeah, I don't know.
No. Okay. But initially, like I said, at Casey, that was the deal. Like, we booted a couple of coaches because they were like, no, we're not doing this. And like, this is the way we're going. So what I would say about our BV curriculum here is, you know, on the boys' side, it's almost exclusively driven by Coops and I based on what we see, you know, upwards and at nationals. But what's been really great is seeing some of the wrinkles and success that our state coaches have had, conversations around that, and we have then made some changes to our stuff saying, you know, that was really good. Let's, you know, do that. So, you know, you've got to have some credibility when you come into that stuff as well. You know, when you're approaching that conversation, it's got to be the right time to approach it. Like in the middle of practice, in front of all the players, you know, is not the right time. You know, those things. But more importantly, like I said, we recently had our state team's planning day, if we want to call it that, which ended with a bit of a coaching clinic that we ran just on some of our system, and we got some players in and everything. And like I said to Coops, it was really pleasing to see, you know, we had Braden Cotter, who's our under 20 first team head coach, and to his right was, you know, the two Metro 8, like one 18s head coach and the 16s, and then to his left was the country, you know, the same 18s and 16s, and they were all sitting together. And there was just, I would just look over there and it was okay, you know, for me, I'm running this clinic and they're just having some conversation. I'm like, this is great, you know. And then they'd sit there, like, this worked for me, you know, we did this, we did that. And because realistically, like, some of Cotter's players were Matt's last year, and now some of Matt's players were Dom's last year, for example, you know, and similarly, you know, on the countryside, and they all move up. So that was just phenomenal to see that, and that's where we want to get to.
Well, and what it does create, though, is a holistic community in that space because, well, look, I had success with this action for that player, but but I didn't think they were as effective when they had to make that decision within this offense. So that might be something for you to be aware of when you have this team. Don't put them in that situation or try and develop it throughout the like the prep work.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's a good thing.
It's such a key point because if you think about, you know, those coaches and we had similar in Ballarat, like if you're coming into this and your argument is about, oh, I don't get to run my stuff or I want to run this and I want to run that, well, why are you really coaching? Because you just, like, you're limited to the chess game and trying to prove that you're smarter than everybody else? Or is it about getting your athletes better? Yeah, and so you should be able to look at any system and get excited about, well, I can put that player in there, or I can try this wrinkle and get him open there or her open there, and have those conversations that the guys are having at the state planning day, and just embrace being able to adapt to whatever it is to make your athletes better. And that's what coaching's all about.
Well, I think that's the biggest part of what your job is. And I say your as in both of you. You obviously have your own programs and all that sort of stuff. You're obviously judged on whether they're successful or not at a national championships. But the bit that a lot of people forget is, are you putting the players that need to be seen at the next level in a position to be seen and be successful at that next level? Because that is a big part of it as well. It's not just, like, we all get the medals are important. Like, we understand it. No one is suggesting go away and lose. But there is an element too of the system you have both put in place is to help showcase the players that are in your programs to be seen at the next level. That in itself is the biggest win for mine.
Yeah, Coops and I have had discussions lately personally around being a little bored with, like, just doing the same thing over and over, like a little bit, you know, over and over. But we've...
So you're bringing in the 1-3-1 zone across the board.
But we've because, and that's because we go and teach it pretty much at every session, yep. Right?
Yeah.
But when we see the kids, you know, doing it and then they go and have success at multiple levels, you know, that's great. So we then get rejuvenated by around, oh, well, this kid has now gone to do that or this team is doing that. You know, let's narrow, like, so recently we've changed a little bit, you know, we both believe that, you know, I know Coops is a defensive guru now, but...
now?
Yeah, yeah. We both believe that offense is harder to be great at, and it takes longer to be great at it, right? And we definitely know that as you improve or go up levels or want to go up levels, some of the defensive stuff happens out of just the need to survive. Like, if you can't do it, you can't play type stuff. So we dialed in a lot for a long time on getting our system right and all this, whereas for our last 3 weeks of our block one for SDP, you know, we surveyed our hub leads and said, you know, we gave them some options and said, you know, what, pick three things that you think we need to work on for our compete session. So we have our compete sessions on Mondays. And, you know, for the probably all of last block and most of this block, it's been largely offensive based, and it came back saying we need to work on some team D stuff now because the offense is getting really good and it's functioning. So we've gone down this path now of, like, right, great, now we've put all these concepts in offensively, now we're going to flip to defending the concepts. And that's been, like, pleasing once again to see some of the feedback we're getting from the hub leads. But it goes the same way when you're with your association, that you should be able to have multiple ways to defend a certain action. So then when those players move on, it's like, oh, you've got something in your toolkit, one or two ways. Now, it might be called something different. And I know Coops and Zoe have spoken about saying, oh, we're going to call it this, but you may have heard it, you know, ABC. But that's ultimately what your job is, to prepare them for what they might see at the next level. So whether it's youth league, NBL1, college, junior national teams, you know, pro, whatever it is. Yeah.
And that's specifically with us, like, we're going to see that in January, you know, that we've got, you know, a number of athletes going to the national performance camp, you know, at the AIS. And we know that a lot of the stuff that's going to be worked on there is connected to our system. And that's why we put it in, so that these guys have had reps in what they're going to see in that environment, which is incredibly important to their journey and you know, ultimately their basketball dreams. So we're always trying to think about, you know, that long-term lens, that wide lens of what are we doing day to day, and how that's affecting, you know, where these kids want to go.
I'll throw the devil's advocate argument just for the sake of being antagonistic on
Let's do it.
Tuesday morning.
Yeah.
Do you fear that you're teaching kids to beat the test, so to speak, rather than teaching them for the long term? Like, is that something that you've had to take into account with this as well? And like, how do you, I suppose, future proof it so that I think when we're all around, when sort of flow was the offense that everyone had to run and not had to run, but everyone was running because there was that feeling that that's where it would be potentially going. How do you stay ahead of that as a coach?
You got to coach the athlete within it. You got to coach the concept within it. So if you stay at, you know, the first floor, which is the movement, that's great. But then that you'll only get so far. You know, you get to that pattern movement, and that's what happened on a Friday night, you know, a number of years ago with Flo. Back cut, handoff, back cut, handoff, back cut, handoff, and you could see that there wasn't detail in the handoff athlete dribbling at the defender. You know, it's a dribble screen. So were we getting genuine contact on that to allow the receiver to take the handoff and turn the corner and create some sort of advantage? You know, the back cut, was the back cut a cut to score? Was the back cut creating space that we could now go into? Was there a secondary back cut when there was an overplay? So, you know, when we're talking about systems, it's not as simple as we're just putting in this framework and then that's it.
Take care of it.
Yeah, it's okay, all right. You know, how can you be successful in it? How can we put you in positions to be successful? How can we coach you up to understand the concepts and utilize your strengths to maximize those concepts?
Yeah,
I think, first of all, we are very mindful of it. So when we started to build our system, based on, you know, what we're seeing at the next level, we then had some counters for things that we would put in that would get us into some other actions that we are currently seeing at all levels, not just with junior Oz team. So, you know, we do have layer screens. We even have a drag screen. We have a cross screen. We have a double stagger screen. We have a single stagger. We have split action. We have all these things that we are seeing on all levels everywhere that we add into it. So I'm confident that we are doing that. We have great dialogue around, hey, did you see this? Did you see that? Maybe, you know, how often are we seeing this happen here, there, wherever? Do we need to start to build some of that in? How can we fit it in? So we are very, very mindful of that. And I think we are doing a good job of it. There's probably, when I look at it, the only thing that we probably don't hit is a turnout. I think that's probably the only thing that we don't hit.
Yeah, and then maybe probably don't play through the low post as much. That's probably something else in terms of, you know, throwing in there more often and having some movement based on what's happening, you know, globally. But again, that's you're talking about two pretty specific.
Yeah, it's personnel
very driven much stuff.
Yeah,
we have run turnouts for a Goulding. You're going to run low post stuff for a Hawk Porty. That's specific to your
we have our early cross, if you remember that, but that's more like a cross screen, down screen to get like a deep seal. On a Monday, I do turnout shooting games, so those kids are aware of it. We just don't have it in our system. So they're aware of the reads. And we have spoken about, you know, starting to evolve like a post action, if you want to call it, if you want to call it that. But at the moment, we're, you know, really, if you look in the NBL, there's probably only one or two players that you would, that they do throw it in on the block too. Like Joluella Chul, definitely.
Well, and Hug Porter, you know, Hug two Porter, are yeah. Same team. Yeah.
Baines gets it there a little bit. It was really pleasing to see it at the World Cup come back. I think. I thought that was good. You know, we know some more of the Euro teams, like they do it because they've got them. don't see it a lot in the NBA, really. But what are we talking? We're talking Embiid.
Jokic.
Maybe Jokic. He
spends a lot of time on the perimeter.
He does. Around that foul line area, he spends a lot of time on that.
Because it's throw it in and go to work. Whereas the Europeans, it's way more, we're going to kind of invert the starting position. So we're going to feed from below the free throw line, and that's where you see like the Bilbao action become really popular, and especially across Europe. I mean, the Warriors did it a bit with Bogut because he was such a good passing big. Yep. It's interesting watching what's happening around the world and those particular concepts and what's being used and what isn't.
Yep.
I used to really like New Zealand's post-action where it was a out-of-the-flow-based stuff where it was a post-feed speed cut, and then your trail post would go the quicker way.
Yeah.
You know, for the guard to wheel around for the catch and shoot. If that wasn't on, it would then be in like an uphill grenade handoff.
Yep.
Or a skip to a middle ball screen. I thought, you know, and we actually had that at Casey for a little while, partly because when the ball goes into the post, everyone turns and looks. I actually think that's probably an area that we need to look at adding. But once again, that is probably more state teams based stuff, you know. Yeah. So those state coaches probably do that because it is definitely more personnel driven.
Yeah, definitely. And this is not to knock anyone that is still running flow out there or anything like that. Like if that's what you want to run, and that's no problems. But just be really specific about what you're teaching and what. Like every action should be a scoring action or should result in a scoring action. It's not just motion for the sake of motion.
Yeah, look, I love flow. Like, you know, we had it there. I think it is a good teaching offense, but it can't just become back cut handoff.
Yeah.
You know, the back cut is meant to catch them by surprise.
Yep.
You know, you can throw it and play loaded side. You can, you know, go like a little like rub into middle ball screen. You can do all these things, which is what it was meant to be. The main reason why we've gone away from it is because you've got to have two bigs.
Yeah.
Yep. And no one does.
But you've got to have two bigs. Like for it to work sort of properly, you really need to have that second, at least someone that's willing to go screen, you know, for it.
Yeah, even if they're a pick and pop big, it's fine, but there's got to be that pick in the first instance to at least
trigger some actions. Yeah. So that's why we, you know, and I found that we were, you always try and look for a minimum of two posts for a team anyway, like one primary, maybe a backup minimum. But we were always trying to find this next person to fit that role because we wanted to run this. So now we're like, you know what, like let's go the other way and just have a system that really only requires one big, and that trail, that second big, if they can do that, there's still some stuff that they have anyway.
Yep.
Whereas we say, you know, the trail can drag in some of our stuff, but if they're not a good screener, we tell them to ghost it and all of those types of things. So
that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. The other part of that too is that the, you know, that secondary big, or, you know, like as we know in Victoria, when we're not getting genuine bigs, the kid that's big now, that let's say he's sprouted to 6'5", may only get to 6'6", 6'7". So, you know, just plonking him down low on a Friday night is doing a disservice to their development. So being able to have a structure that's only one post base, that you can move guys in and out of that to develop both perimeter and interior skills.
Correct.
Is a must.
Yep, makes perfect sense. And this is one thing you've got to be conscious of. Like you've spoken about a lot probably in the last 10 minutes. You're not ripping that out with your under-12s. So when you're starting to think about what your playbook would look like, it's that layering on top of, look, you're not ready for this yet, so we're not even thinking about those actions. Here's what you need to get down first. And for your under-12 kids, it might simply just be your transition stuff. Like, don't even worry about that. Transition, floor spacing. Like, perfect. If you can get that right in 12,
receivers.
Long way down the road compared to everyone else. So by the time you hit 14s, now you can start to be a little bit more particular with what the playbook looks like. The solution is not just a bigger playbook for every ill that you come across.
That's very... very apt, Rob, because once again in Casey we had that, and then it was like this is the under-12s, and then under-14s was everything in under-12s plus this. Under-16s was everything in under-12s and under-14s plus this, and so on and so on. That's how it went.
Yeah, we were the same. We were under-12s was just our transition stuff, and then a basic pass cut motion. But the idea was that the split kick extra, but basically your dominoes into your receivers was paramount with the spacing. And then we gave them the basic structure of, because we were running flow at the time, because it married with Country Vic and national style play. But there was no screening. So it was the same movement pattern, so they could get used to the pattern, but we were still, you know, prioritizing the ability to create a split and have spacing and move off the ball. And then when they got to 16s, then we added the screening and started giving them some more counters. And then obviously by 18s, it was supposed to look the way it looked. But, I mean, if you want to see what Flo is really capable of in the read and react offense that it's supposed to be, just watch the Boomers at the 2019 World Cup.
Yeah.
When Lamanis had them humming. Like, that thing was... That was really cool. That's what it can look like.
So that was the 2S offense that you had, the sprint and separate?
Yeah.
Is that that's that what
right.
it was?
That's right. I like exactly.
it.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. I've just realized we probably should have put video to a lot of this stuff. This might be a future thing. Like, in particular, the last 10, 15 minutes, there's been a lot of actions thrown out there that people listening at home may not be aware of what the terminology is and those types of things. If that's the case, hit us up and we'll try and get you some diagrams, at least a little bit of understanding as to what we're talking about in this space as well. So... Be specific, though. Don't just say, oh, can you just send me everything? No. Ask what a grenade is, and I'll send you what a grenade is, and I'll get sorted on that.
Ask Santa for a fast draw subscription for a year.
Jeez, Santa's got to be cashed up this year because it's getting a little more expensive, I noticed. I was at the Paymon not too long ago, and it hit me, but worth it by the same token.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's, you know, I'd be lost without it.
I love the little, you know, you get it each week, you get the email, the plays of the week, or it's really good around tournament time, you know, whether it's World Cup, college basketball, whatever it might be, these are the actions that this team is running to have success. It's like, great, yeah, let's have a look at this. Yeah,
absolutely. No, it is a very, very worthwhile program to use. Works on Mac or PC, works on tablets as far as I'm aware as well.
Yeah,
very good resource to have for your coaching. Thank you both for jumping into this one. I know this is your last one before you guys take off, so best of luck in the States. And we'll catch everyone next week on the Talking Split Pod. Tune in, enjoy the